I hear two guys talking.
I love the Talking Guys show.
I hear two guys talking.
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 Two Guys Talking is an internet radio show providing you with entertainment, a sharing of viewpoints, and fun. Join us as we venture into the world of entertainment and discuss a variety of topics, from television shows, DVDs, feature films, and more. This week, Two Guys Talking.
Pirates of the Caribbean, a dead man's chest.
Avast ye land lovers.
Arr.
It's time for Two Guys Talking. Pirates of the Caribbean, a dead man's chest. We roll into our second feature film review. This week, it's going to be the sequel to the infinitely even more entertaining Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl. Arr. I'm Mike Wilkerson, one of your hosts.
I am Brian Sumatros, your other host. And Mike had a great time, I thought, this weekend. Spent a good 3 hours at the local movie theater watching Pirates of the Caribbean, the Curse of the Black Pearl.
Yeah, and it was really nice to get into a theater this weekend. This last week in St. Louis was sweltering.
It was
pretty hot. I mean, it was very, very
approaching
hot.
Approaching 100 degrees. Yeah. It was very nice coming in. Actually, we have a thing within the city of St. Louis. Whenever there's a heat advisory or if it's over a certain amount of degrees outside, the movie theaters actually have a discount on their movies, which is a great thing for families and everything to go in and
also
watch a
movie. With wooden legs and eye patches can also get in for a significant discount as well, matey.
Arr!
Arr! Just for everyone, in case you're wondering, this review will be replete with all kinds of absolutely wide brush painting pirate references.
Arr! Could that get more annoying if we do it any more often? But it's fun.
Well, it's a lot of fun. All right, let's get straight to it. The theaters where the movie was seen. Brian, I saw this movie once again at the very Regal Cinema over at St. Louis Mills. Absolutely hardcore sound system. This time the theater was filled with people. I had an absolute crowd in this one.
A little more electricity on this one compared to Superman Returns?
Yeah, and I'm not real sure why yet, but we're going to find out as we get in through the review.
Yeah, actually, my wife and I made it out to the St. Charles 18 Cinema by the house.
Sure.
And there was a little more electricity this time. Mm-hmm. About the same number of people in the theater.
Really?
As when we watched Superman Returns,
yeah,
but it was definitely a little more excitement. And at the end of the movie, whereas in Superman Returns, it was basically people just getting up and leaving, we actually had half of the audience actually clapping.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, it was definitely a little more enthused about this version of
Something
Pirates.
I'd like to hear about from the listeners, too, is when you go to movies and it's got the stadium-style seating, how empty is the flat seating still? Because in our theater, there was one guy. It was one guy sitting in the middle on the flat
choosing,
seats in the middle.
Choosing to sit there, or because that's the only seat left that was left?
There was only one guy in the seats that were down on the bottom. The rest of the seat, everybody else was sitting upstairs in the stadium seating rows.
Yeah, the times that we've gone to the movies, I mean, there have been nobody in those flat seats unless it's standing room only. Those are the only seats you can get.
Interesting.
And there have been two movies that we've gone to where we've walked out because we didn't get there in time.
Right.
We had to sit in the front. And I mean, that's ridiculous having to sit and your head's propped up looking at the screen.
I
and
totally
you're way
agree
too
with
close.
That. I think the first two or three rows I think could be done away with.
Yeah.
Because I don't know anybody that wants to sit in there and, you know, crane your neck and have what is a ridiculous view of the movie. And the first three rows, that's a joke.
Well, just even the size of the screen, you can't really comprehend everything that's going on because you're so close. It's kind of like watching a big screen TV at home in a really small room. And if you're too close, it just doesn't look right. You don't get the full feeling of it.
Right.
So, like you said, I mean, they could probably do away with those seating in the front.
And I'd like to hear from people. Log on to our website, www.twoguystalking.com, and email us and tell us what you think of the stadium seating arrangement where they've got stadium seating, but they've still got the leper colony down in the bottom.
Arr!
The leper colony, arr! The money.
Lots of money.
Tons of money. My goodness, this movie is making a ton of treasure. Arr!
Treasure trove of money. Arr!
That's really going to get annoying.
That's what we're here for.
Gold doubloons aplenty.
What do you think? I mean, how often do we get to have a podcast where we get to go,
arr!
One every 2 years, 3 years?
Yeah. When the next sequel comes out, we'll be able to do it again. The money is phenomenal in this one. Just the three-day weekend take is phenomenal. I don't think it's ever been matched.
Yeah, it looks like we're... Yeah, it looks like on USA Today they posted some of the numbers, and over the three-day weekend, 132 million.
Yeah, and for those first three days. Man, that is just staggering. It's a ton of money. And you know what's funny is the last time we had whatever the largest movie was, we thought, oh, well, it's because it's so many years later and movies cost more money. Well, no. This one is just taking in cash like a giant corn combine in a field. It's just it's raking in cash.
And what's kind of odd is it's kind of a quiet record-breaking weekend.
Yeah.
You know, because I haven't really heard any of the stuff about all these records it's breaking and, you know, Entertainment Tonight, you know, three-day record total for Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
It's not like that. I mean, for Star Wars, you know, they played it up with how many people went to the theaters.
When we started this review, we were looking for what is basically a sum total of what they've got now, because I know it's even more staggering. It's at over $200 million that it's collected so far over this last week. We didn't find it on the front page of any news website. And you would think something that rakes in that much money over what isn't a holiday weekend and rather a kind of a mundane weekend.
Yeah.
And you know what? I wonder if maybe the heat doesn't have something to do with the money being made. Because where do you go when it's hot?
Right.
You either stay at home and do whatever you want or you head to the theater. That really is the case.
I still think, I mean, we had mentioned this on the last show where we did Superman Returns.
Yeah.
That we both predicted that Pirates would probably do a lot better than what Superman Returns did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think
that was based on a variety of factors.
Sure.
It wasn't just that the, in general, and I wouldn't even say the movie was better, but it's a totally different audience. I really do still believe that.
You think
that.
So?
Yeah.
I still think
I
it's the same sort of audience that's going out there. But anyways, maybe the heat does have a little factor in it because, I mean, across the country, it's actually just hotter than hell everywhere.
Yeah.
And maybe that was bringing in a little bit more. Maybe that tipped the scales of it surpassing Star Wars, which they're saying on a one-day take on Friday, Pirates did 55.5 million. And I think the last record was Star Wars Episode III that did 50 million in
right,
one day.
Right. I mean, so, it's phenomenal money. It's huge money. And there are many things that I like about this film and the entire franchise. Mm-hmm. And it's great to see that there's going to be money thrown back at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Regardless of the theater we saw it in, and the giant treasure trove of money that's been taken in, the bottom line is we need to get to the good and bad of the film, so let's get to it. You guys talking? The good.
Mike, one of the good points of the movie that I just, and I take this from the very first one that came out a couple years ago, Johnny Depp is phenomenal. And Johnny Depp, he really encompasses the character of Captain Jack Sparrow.
Good, good, good.
And he is awesome at his role as Captain Jack. And I almost think that maybe his character is almost too big. He plays his character too grand that it overshadows a lot of the other characters in the movie, at least, especially in this one here.
I think I've got a different viewpoint. We'll wait till later on in the review for me to bring up Johnny Depp. Obviously, I like the character of Jack Sparrow. I think it's one of the landmark characters of the 2000 era. Mm-hmm. Clearly, we'll be able to look back on this in a long time and go, oh, yeah, Captain Jack Sparrow. I remember that. I remember Johnny Depp, blah, 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 blah. He's definitely going to be an icon. Inside of this one, I had a different take on the character.
See, I think the character that he created, it's such a unique way of portraying him.
Yeah.
And I just think it's such, it's so innovative the way that he portrays the character of Captain Jack. And you see him on the movie. That's Captain Jack.
Right.
You know, as opposed to that's Johnny Depp playing this character.
He is absolutely iconographic. I totally give you that. You guys talking? The effects. Brian, this movie is probably one of the absolute tour de forces of special effects that I've ever seen. Every single segment of special effects I was absolutely enthralled with. There weren't anywhere it's kind of that, oh, there's an effect. Mm-hmm. I didn't get any of that. Some of the special computer effects were all outstanding. What did kind of pop up were some of the wire work and some of the actual real physical effects. Some of those raised a couple of red flags, but it's just because it's where you've got to, you know, suspend disbelief and kind of go along with the show. But in general, this was one of the best tour de forces of CGI that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was really happy with the special effects throughout the movie, and I think, you know, a couple of the times that maybe you're mentioning is when Captain Jack was running and he had the pole kind of strapped to his back and he was able to kind of flip over the
gorge and
yeah.
then with the wheel running and stuff like that. It's very fantastical, and it reminded me a lot of Pink Panther, especially because of the way that he portrays Captain Jack and his mannerisms and stuff. It's very Clouseau. And so that harkened back to that, and I loved the Pink Panther series, so that kind of got me.
But something like this, in this type of movie, that doesn't bother me.
Right.
And I understand what you're saying in some movies to where you have to be a little more credible to reality and to stick within those confines, that sort of stuff in this movie didn't really bother me. I mean, I actually kind of thought it fit in pretty well with the movie, so that is a good point. The special effects across the board, CGI and the physical type of special effects, I think they did a good job.
Yeah, very good. And always a shout-out for anyone who has subscribed to CineFX Magazine. There is a fantastic review of the effects of that movie coming up straight away in the next issue, I'm sure.
You guys talking?
Piggybacking on the special effects, Mike, I really took from this movie the bad guys on here. I love the new set of bad guys that they came up with. And one of the problems that I was thinking of coming into the movie is, you know, in the first movie, they did such an excellent job with the baddies.
Yeah.
The whole skeleton, dead, ghosty kind of pirates that turned into, you know, they did an excellent job. And I'm like, you know, how are they going to top something like that? And
they did it.
Went
absolutely
way over the top on this one here. And the whole sea creature type people was really good. The hammerhead captain that they had.
Right, the Flying Dutchman itself, in that it basically was a ship and a submarine at the same time.
Right.
I mean, it's totally fantastical, and you can see that they totally destroyed the box of what things have to be to make the villains inside of this movie, all of them, whether it be the hammerhead shark guy you're talking about, or actually the captain, Davy Jones.
Davy Jones.
Just all of it is absolutely just across the board, way over the top as far as quality. Really good.
And Davy Jones himself, I love that character. Yeah. I mean, the way that they created the guy, the way he looks, the way that he acted. The first scene where we see him where they've got the three or four guys held captive and he's kind of walking along and he's smoking on his pipe.
Right.
And the smoke coming out of his
tentacle
things.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I mean, he's got to be one of my favorite CGI type characters that's out there next to Gollum from Lord of the Rings. Well, they just did a really good job.
And there was actually a special article on how they pulled that off, by the way, how they made that guy what is basically an octopus pseudo guy thing. And I mean, it really is impressive. You think, you know, computer technology, it's hit its crest. No. It continues to spur on, and this movie in particular, we talk about how groundbreaking Gollum was inside of the Lord of the Rings films, and it was. This one is over and above Gollum for me as far as the actual special effects. I can look at that guy's face and I go, there's a dude under there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in actuality, there was a dude under there that they've mapped a whole bunch of points on his face and then connected that to what is supposed to be the muscles that move his eyes and his mouth and his tendrils and stuff all at the same time. And, I mean, it's extraordinary. It really is tremendous.
Yeah, a lot of the times they take shortcuts when they're creating these CGI characters, you know.
And it shows sometimes.
And it does show, and you don't get a feeling that it's a real actor, it's a real character, whereas people like Gollum, you took from that movie from Lord of the Rings that he was an actual character that could win an Oscar or win an Academy Award for his portrayal as Gollum.
Right.
And I get this from Davy Jones in this movie that he's an actual person.
Yeah.
Creepy as he looked.
Right. But, well, in all of them. I mean, all of them, including even Bootstrap Bill, who enters back into this movie, who is portrayed by one of my absolutely favorite actors, mostly because of his name. His name is Stellan Skarsgård.
Skarsgård,
a perfect pirate name if ever I heard.
Speaking of that, do you remember watching, I guess it was a few months ago, the Saturday Night Live episode where it's a pirate convention? And they all come in and they start inviting, forget who the guest star was on there to speak to them. But every time they had something with an R in the name, they would all go, R! And so they were talking about some of their favorite actors and they mentioned his name and they said, Skarsgård!
Perfect. It just really is stellar. And where I remember him from, there's two movies I remember him from in particular. One is Hunt for Red October.
Mm-hmm.
He plays the captain of the mini rogue submarine that tries to destroy the Red October. And then, of course, I remember him from Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
He plays the math professor that got the Fields Medal.
Ah, yep.
So, he's absolutely one of my favorites, and he's one of those people that when it's in a movie, he absolutely knocks the ball out of the park, and this was no exception.
And I will admit to the listeners my moment of idiocy, which actually my wife and I both were under the impression that Jeffrey Rush played Bootstrap Bill in the movie.
No.
And that's not – and knowing now that that wasn't the case, that was Stellan Skarsgård, but
– Right. He played the captain in the first film.
Right,
Jeffrey Rush
right.
played the captain
but
in the
we thought
film.
By the end of the movie, we're like, did Jeffrey Rush play two characters? Because we thought Jeffrey Rush was playing Bootstrap.
Okay, no.
And that wasn't the case because I thought he looked just like him.
Yeah. Now, there was a, it's funny you mentioned that because there was some other character inside of this movie, and I think it's sadly because I was falling asleep. Mm-hmm. But I just – I remember opening my eyes, and I'm like, that's kind of Johnny Depp looking, except that it's not Johnny Depp. And it was the guy that played the spurned colonel guy when he first showed up. And I'm
back.
Like, is that Johnny Depp? It almost looks like maybe they took Johnny Depp's face and the spurned colonel and kind of morphed their face so that you would intentionally think that it was also Johnny Depp playing that character for that particular
right.
period of time.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
Yeah. And going back to the Jeffrey Rush thing, I mean, going through the movie, my wife and I, we kind of leaned over to each other like, man, Jeffrey Rush is doing a pretty good job in this. And it wasn't even him.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, an odd thing, though, and I don't know if anybody else noticed this, and I tried to do an internet search. Jeffrey Rush wasn't mentioned in the credits at all.
I think that was intentional, mostly because he shows up for the last 10 seconds of the film.
But still, I mean, there's movies where you have a brief appearance by a major star,
yeah.
and they still plug him in as an and at the end of the credits.
You know, what's really funny, though, is that we can look back at our absolutely favorite television program, 24, mm-hmm. which we review, by the way, at twoguystalking.com/24. And in there are all kinds of uncredited roles, and it's intentional. So that you don't know who's coming back, how long they're going to be coming back for, if they're coming back. All that's masked by not including them inside the credits.
And I can
so
see...
So that the detail freaks like you and I
yeah.
can't go into a movie and destroy it for everybody else
right.
when all we do is see their credited
name. And I can see that kind of in the TV show, because you've got 24 other shows to where you can plug his name in. But you're talking, here's a feature film. And that's one of the big things with these stars. They want to get their names out on
yeah.
the credits and everything like that. And we actually waited until all the credits had rolled, and we're like, we missed his name.
We missed his name, right.
And and for those of you that didn't stay until the very end, there is a 10 to 15 second clip after the credits roll that's kind of a little funny clip. I kind of think it was a waste of time to wait for it, but for
yeah.
those of you that want to see everything
yeah.
in the movie, after the names roll, they do show like a 10, 15 second clip of the movie at the very end.
Right.
So.
And I'm not sure how I feel about those things. I think if they're meaningful and they have something to do with either the story or a sequel or something, I think I see that. The other ones that just have something tagged on the end to have something tagged on the end because they want people to sit in the theater longer, it's a ripoff.
You guys talking?
Mike, the third thing that I took from the movie this weekend was the look and the feel of the first two movies so far in relating that to the actual ride at Disneyland.
Okay.
And I used to live in Southern California for about 10 years or so, and we'd go to Disneyland almost every year, and Pirates
sure.
of the Caribbean, the ride, was one of my favorite rides.
Oh, I got you.
And, the look, the feeling, the whole kind of persona of the ride at
sure.
Disneyland. And what really looked like it was when they were in the swamp scene,
mm-hmm.
and they were kind of in their boat, and they were kind of going through the trees, and you see the people up on the sides of the banks of the embankment or whatever, and that's exactly what the ride is like.
Mm-hmm.
There's some other scenes when they're at Tortuga, you've got these pirates or these scourge of society, and they're drowning this one pirate in the well. That's another scene that's from the ride. I mean, if you really look, if you've been on the ride at Disneyland, watch the movie closely. You'll probably have to watch the movie two or three times, but you'll catch things that are in the ride that are in the movie.
Interesting.
And it's one of those things that harkens me back to going back to Disneyland.
Right, and I'm certain that that's intentional, mostly because that ride has been an absolute hallmark
mm-hmm.
of Disney's, you know, time immemorial.
Right.
I can remember seeing different versions of that ride as it escalates and upgrades, and then now finally falls into a feature film. So, yeah, absolutely, it's a huge deal. Well, we have a ton of listings for great and good things in this film. Sadly, as in every movie, we also have the bad.
Arr! Bad.
The bad. Arr! You had mentioned Johnny Depp as one of the good things.
For me.
For you.
Yes.
I sadly list Johnny Depp as one of the bad things in this film.
Okay,
and it's,
let us know.
I'm with everybody. Stop throwing stones and wooden peg legs and having your parrots attack me. I agree with you. Captain Jack Sparrow is an absolute icon of the 2000s feature film movie era. I get that. he provides a wonderful portrayal inside this movie. The problems that crop up in this, one, the entrance. If you remember back to the first film, it has to be one of the absolute feature entrances of any character ever in moviedom. It's where he's in his little craft, and it's taking on water, and he's bailing out water, and as it gets closer into the bay, he finally ends up being on top of the mast, and as the mast goes under the water, he steps onto the dock and meets that guy with the little boy.
Very savvy.
Very, very smooth as silk. Mm-hmm. In this entrance, no.
The whole coffin scene and him shooting the
coffin scene, and even before then, it looked like something out of Lord of the Rings, where there's this giant castle and it's got fire and ugly, you know, painted people all over the place, and they're throwing off coffins into the ocean, burial at sea, or whatever. And there's some coffins floating off into the sea, and a bird lands on the top and starts pecking on the top, and a gun goes off, blows the bird into oblivion, and out pops Captain Jack, and he wrangles the leg bone of the dead dude inside the coffin and starts rowing away with it. The leg bone thing, it was good. It was all right. But it was nowhere near the entrance that it was in the first movie. And I just, of all the time they spent on things, I thought that they would put more time to that.
With an entrance. And I kind of see what you're saying on there. I mean, I like the entrance that they brought Captain Jack in with the second movie. Do I think it's as good as the first entrance that you had mentioned? No.
Right.
But it's one of those things that you think about. You see Captain Jack, and obviously you're thinking, well, God, he got himself into some trouble again.
Right.
Had to find a way to get himself out of it.
And the way he escaped was that he got into literally a dead man's chest and was able to get out. There's a second part of also why I listed Johnny Depp as bad, and it's because they almost pulled this off, because if about three-quarters of the way, almost to the end of the film, they take Jack from what is, we think, somebody who is supporting everybody that we like in the movie, and they try to turn him into a villain. And as you get towards the end of the film, you don't get that. You don't, because they're still kind of giving some reverence to Captain Jack, even though he was trying to screw them. And I don't like that. I don't mind having the, well, we think he's a, you know, we think he's the total scourge of the sea, and we don't like him, and he's only thinking about himself when he's really not. Well, they never give that at the end of this movie, and I get that it might be because it's actually a bridge movie to the third movie.
Right.
But I didn't get that. I didn't get to the end where I go, Captain Jack was a good man in this movie. He wasn't. He was an ass.
And that's how you want them to portray him, as an ass? Or
I want him to pick one.
Okay.
That or try and trick me into thinking that he's good, but he's really bad.
Right.
I don't want them to leave me ambiguous. I want them to tell me what I want to take from Captain Jack.
But I think what they're doing, and they're kind of putting yourself into the mind of Captain Jack and that struggle that he has and knowing what he should do in versus what he's probably done all his life in being very selfish and self-centered on himself.
Right.
And like you said, I mean, there's several instances in the movie to where he kind of teeters back and forth. The one that
teeters is a really good word.
That I remember in the movie is when the big squid monster comes up and is starting to destroy the boat.
Yeah.
And Keira Knightley's character looks off in the boat and Captain Jack is rowing
taking
off.
Taking off in a boat.
Off.
Right, yeah.
And
which makes me kind of think that the squid, the Karkin, is kind of a stupid monster.
Mm-hmm.
Because the dude that he's trying to get, well, there he is there in a boat, jackass. What are you doing?
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. But I think the problem that you have, I think, is an intentional thing that they want the viewers to struggle with Jack, whether or not you want him to be the guy that's going to defend his friends and be there for his guys that he believes in versus, yeah, you know, he's always kind of grown up being very selfish, self-centered, looking out for himself.
Right. I guess I take from the first movie where we were with him for, you know, 60, 65%, 70% of the film, and then at the end you go, oh, you son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. We never got to the, you son of a bitch part. Even when he's run away from the ship, I'm like, oh, well, yeah, that's par for the course.
Sure.
Because self-preservation is always in there. That he opens the movie with self-preservation.
Yeah.
So why would I expect him to not try and get away from this giant, the Karkin?
Other than at the end of the movie when he's handcuffed to the mast of the boat.
Right,
he can't go anywhere.
Right, but if he'd had a choice, he'd get off the boat and not get eaten by the Kraken.
Sure. No, I understand that, and I'm going to throw something in on this subject as well, because as much as I did love Johnny Depp as Captain Jack Sparrow, the one thing I'm not sure, and I'm teetering myself is the whole opening up of this love sequence with Keira Knightley's character.
It wasn't, though. That was totally intentional on her part so that she could push him back against the rope and then clink, put on the handcuff.
And I know that, but I think that they are kind of alluding to this three-way between the three characters, the three main characters there.
I disagree.
And I did think that was a hot scene with her talking to Captain Jack, and she's up real close to him, and she's talking very softly, and their lips are just about ready to kiss.
Yeah, but see, her, just like every other woman, just wants to stick it to the pirate. Ah.
Right. But I do think that they're trying to set up a little bit of a love interest between Captain Jack and Keira Knightley's character.
I don't want that. I want Captain Jack to go on his mighty way and fight for self-preservation and screw people and help them at the end. That's what I want people to do.
Mike, what made on my bad list for the movie was way too damn long.
You know what? I didn't get that. But go ahead.
Well,
go ahead,
you probably didn't get it because you were probably half asleep.
I was, honestly. There were two parts. And you know what I think it was? I think because it was so damn cold in the theater. I love sleeping when it's cold.
Yeah, absolutely.
When it's Arctic, I'm like chinking down the thermostat so that I sleep in like 40-degree weather in the house. Mm-hmm. And it was really nice and comfortable instead of the theater. Plus, and we'll get to another negative of the story. I wasn't caught. I'm like, let's go.
Well, I think the fact that the movie was too long, I mean, it was almost 3 hours long. My wife and I, we both talked about at the end of the movie, we're like, you know, boy, that could have really been edited down quite a bit.
Yeah.
Where they could have taken stuff here and there, I'm not really sure. I'd have to probably go see the movie again.
Right.
But it just seemed like, kind of like what you just mentioned, you're wanting it to kind of get somewhere, get going.
Right. It's the wheel scene is a great scene, and I think that might be the one where you want to tear down. It's like, I want to go kick the wheel over so that they'll get off the damn wheel and move on.
Right. The whole fighting the three swords for a while, and Keira Knightley's over there kind of looking at them. She's trying to get their attention. And then the two other pirates steal the chest, and then the wheel scene. You're right. I mean, that could have been probably pared down quite a bit as well.
If not almost completely gone. Because really, there's no reason for the other two pirates from the first film to come and get the box, the mojo that allows people to understand that the heart of Davy Jones is inside the box. Why doesn't it follow whoever's got it in his jacket rather than, oh, well, we all got to pay attention to this chest? Well, I don't understand that. And it's where they take the science, quote unquote, of what is a movie, and they twist the science so that they can fit it into the story. Mm-hmm. And when you need to do that, I say just get rid of all that. You don't need any of that.
I think the movie would have been helped out quite a bit if it was a little bit shorter. They had tightened up on the editing. It might have helped you with staying awake maybe a little bit. Yeah. But also
liking the characters. It was so long, and there were so many different tacks to take it. And we'll get more to that when we get to the story. But there were so many different tacks to take, you couldn't go, oh, okay, well, I'm going to believe in this for a minute. You couldn't do it.
And I think one of the things that we all have to keep in mind, and you just mentioned this about 30 seconds ago, is that this is the second movie of the three-movie trilogy here.
Right.
And unfortunately, with a lot of those second movies, a lot of people don't like those middle movies because they kind of leave it open on purpose.
Right.
So you just kind of want it to get to the third movie. So I'm going to kind of reserve my total judgment on the second movie until I see the third,
which is
something that we've all done with Star Wars, Lord of the Rings. Although Lord of the Rings, I think the second movie was just as good as the first.
Lord of the Rings,
and
all the
third
movies
one,
stand
all of them were just.
And see, that's really what we're talking about here. Is we're talking about movies that set the bar and then expect everybody else to at least match them, and it cannot be done. There are movies that define film, and Lord of the Rings is way up on the bar.
Lord of the Rings, each one of those movies, excellent movies, one, two, and three.
Absolutely.
Star Wars
straight
was a movie where it just got better. One, a lot of people are very disappointed.
Yeah.
Two, finally kind of got on track.
Yeah.
Three was the dark version that most people our age was hoping Lucas would take with the Star Wars franchise.
Yeah.
And on this one here, we'll have to wait until this third movie to see how the second one kind of fits in.
You guys talking?
The skulking painted black folk. This is another one of those things where in Superman Returns, if you got rid of the kid, what happens? And the answer is nothing. If you get rid of the skulking painted black folk in this movie, what happens?
You talking the black folk that are in the swamp?
The cannibals.
Okay, yeah.
The cannibals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in the opening of the movie in Tortuga, right? Or is that not Tortuga?
I don't see that.
Whatever.
That's even a better question. I don't know what to tell you because I either fell asleep or I didn't know where I was.
Sure.
And it's so. I mean, the whole thing is that. And I'm not saying that this is painting as black people as poor. And that's not what I mean. That the skulking painted black folk didn't serve a purpose other than some semi comic relief.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than that, they were absolutely useless. And we were talking about paring down the story. This is where that story needed to be pared down.
They might have been able to kind of shorten up that scene there, but it kind of reminded me of the whole Indiana Jones type thing with the whole Indians and the guys that are
I cannot subscribe this movie to that same level. No way. In fact, there was honestly, I don't think there was any comedy relief inside of the Temple of Doom movie with the little Indian children. That scared the hell out of me.
Well, not that one, but I'm talking like the regular Indiana Jones movie at the beginning, you know, with the Rolling Rock and all those guys that are there in the beginning. Temple of Doom was definitely a lot scarier.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily have a problem with the painted black people or the Indian people. Were they even black Indians?
They looked like painted black folk to me. Yeah. I mean, they were cannibals, and we didn't see them cannibalizing anybody. We saw some skulls.
And other than eating Captain Jack.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing. It's like, again, all we lose is that one segment where Captain Jack is actually sitting there, and he looks like he's sleeping, but he's got eyes painted on his eyelids. Mm-hmm. And so other than losing that scene and that's associated with that scene, you lose nothing by losing it, so why not lose it?
I'm almost wondering if that was a way for the writers to get the characters together, because that's where all the characters kind of came together for the movie. Could they have done it differently? They probably could have.
I just, with all the imagination that it takes to make movies like this, and clearly the imagination to make the villains inside of this segment of the films, mm-hmm. come on. There has to be a way to get something more vibrant and moving rather than what we had. It didn't move. Didn't move for me.
You guys talking?
One of the other negatives I took from the movie was, and I've touched on this a couple times talking about this review, I think Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley were actually overshadowed by the character that Johnny Depp played.
Right.
Johnny Depp is so over the top, and it's such a great character that the other two you kind of forget about. I mean, they're definitely in the shadows.
Oh, they're definitely in supporting with a little s, not a capital S.
Yeah.
They're there to help move the story along, and I'll tell you what, I would have gotten rid of probably half of what we saw with Captain Jack to see more of the father-son relationship with Bootstrap Bill and Will. I would have loved to have seen more of that. We got some kind of candid and father's helping and taking the punishment of this for the son. Mm-hmm. We had some of that.
Right.
But I think that there was a lot more story to tell. And hell, with an actor like Stellan Skarsgård, how can you not want to do something like that?
I think that probably would have lent to a little deeper storyline. I probably would have enjoyed that a little bit more. But again, I can't argue with seeing too much Depp because I love Depp in the movie.
Right.
Whereas maybe a little bit different for you, but you can't do too much Depp for me in this movie. But it just seemed like
clearly you can do too little Orlando Bloom and too little.
Well, they just completely disappeared.
Right.
As opposed in the first movie, I thought that they were actually very noticeable characters.
They were woven into the story, and in this one,
you don't really care. I actually thought Keira Knightley was one of her worst performances. Actually, I didn't care
too much for her
performance in that.
I don't disagree with that.
Completely gorgeous,
absolutely
hot, and again, the scene that she had with Johnny Depp, that was hot. But other than that, again, where were they?
Yeah. Semi-hot, but not voodoo chick. What the hell is this character? What is this character, and how does she move the story forward? And the answer is, just like the little boy from Superman Returns, and just like a couple of the other people that we've mentioned, nothing. They do nothing. And so why are they there? Other than to make some more creepy, swamp-based semi-storyline that I really didn't buy it.
I sort of agree with you there, and you've mentioned the whole boy from Superman Returns, and I do disagree on that there, because I do think
he did serve
a purpose, which may not be integral in that particular movie, but it's probably something that's coming up for the second movie of Superman.
I'm not sold on how you need to have people bank on a movie because of the next movie that's coming out.
The whole fact that Superman has a kid that nobody knew about, I think that's kind of big for at least Superman. But back on this one here, they could have totally gotten rid of this voodoo witch woman and done something else with it. I thought she would end up with a bigger role, which she didn't.
And brushed her teeth. That whole I just ate some charcoal with some grape jelly look going is not good.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the teeth, because I actually noticed the teeth, but I didn't think her teeth were worse enough. I didn't think her teeth were bad enough.
Oh.
Because I thought it looked like your typical Hollywood actress that they tried to make ugly, and they didn't do a very good job.
I think she should have been missing some
other teeth. Because it looked like she had braces or something. I mean, she had perfect teeth.
Yeah, except they were discolored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of a weak thing, you know?
And I agree. I agree there,
so
totally.
A little bit of the attention to details that I think they kind of just sloppily painted over or something.
You guys talking?
The effects. I know what everybody's saying.
You said the effects were good.
I know everybody's saying, well, he just said the effects were great. They were stupendous and landmark filling history of film. Arr! Yes, that's true. That's absolutely true. But there are so many effects in this movie. It leads me into what is my absolute last point.
You guys talking?
The story of this film is it's ADD on film. Tell me in 10 seconds, what is the goal of the film?
What is the goal of the film? Basically, I guess, I don't know.
That's my point. You've just...
Come on, man.
You've just showcased my point. And I'm reasonably certain... But you're good in thinking on your feet. And if you, who are good in thinking on your feet, who just saw this movie, that just creamed all over it like a pirate over a pirate's dead man's chest, can't tell me what the basic storyline of the movie is in 10 seconds. Where are we as far as story? And the answer is, we're in a movie that has tons of special effects, has a couple of really great actors, several of which were completely overshadowed. We have special effects at the wazoo. I would love to see a number count, and I'll bet you in CineFX Magazine they'll be able to tell us what the number count for special effects sets was in this particular movie. Because I'll bet you almost every scene has some sort of special effect in it. And I know that they want that to help the movie and immerse people, but there's a line that you have to reach, and I think this one just wails right over it. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because, I mean, look at the box office take. It's huge. But as far as telling a story, I think it might have hurt it, and that's why I put it in as a negative.
Well, and I think maybe the problem is that maybe the storyline was with Orlando Bloom's character trying to get back with Keira Knightley, and it started with that he had to go and approach Captain Jack Sparrow to get the key to this the box, and all of a sudden that storyline just kind of forget about
10 seconds is done.
Yeah, but I'm saying they didn't do enough of a good job of doing that storyline of the hero getting back with the heroine.
Right. In general, in just about every movie that you look at, especially the great ones, what you're going to see is an exposition scene where you get what is basically the roadmap of the movie. Mm-hmm. This movie does not contain that. What it does have is a bunch of pieces that are shown to you every now and then, like the key with the map and the chest and Davy Jones and... the Black Pearl that's now not nearly as haunted looking, and so it's a showcase like this, like I'm flipping through a book and showing you things with my hands, but it is not. I don't ever get okay, here's the picture, and now I'm gonna wait to see how the pages are filled in. I never get that with this movie.
I almost wonder if maybe it's basically a blank canvas, and then you just throw Johnny Depp's character on there and say, okay, just do whatever you kind of want and showcase the character.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
As opposed to actually moving a storyline across. And, you know, now that I think about it, maybe the storyline was kind of very hard to grasp onto. But, again, I don't think I necessarily needed that for this type of movie.
Right. I think when you match up what we've just talked about with the basically no conclusions at the end of this film, that's why I'm so down in the dumps with the story. Because somewhere there has to be a reason for the story not working. And so between the things we've talked about, I think we've found that.
You guys talking?
Conclusions are... I give this one 2 gold doubloons. I think everybody, again, should see it in the theater because you will be absolutely spellbound by the effects that are in this film. You'll also be spellbound by the way they take the actors, especially the ones that were basically just giant pieces of CGI, and work through the story. The story is the negative dragging anchor that takes you down to Davy Jones' locker.
Now let me ask you this. If you had to choose between watching The Superman Returns or recommending going to see Pirates, which one would you recommend to somebody?
I'd tell them to go see Pirates.
Would you?
Yeah. And it's not because I hate Superman Returns. It's that if you look at the two, even though I rated them the same, the bang for buck is this movie, even though I fell asleep in it a couple times.
Well, as for me, I actually enjoyed the movie. I thought it was quite entertaining. I had a really good time in the theater watching it. I gave it 3 out of 4 stars, and I think this is something that most people are going to go to watch it, which obviously if you look at the numbers, a lot of people wanted to go see this movie.
Sure.
As far as like some of the reviews, I actually haven't seen a lot of the critical reviews yet, so I'm not sure if
a lot of
the critics were really liking this or not. Keep in mind that this is the second movie of the 3-movie trilogy here, so... they had to kind of leave a few things open, whereas the movie probably would have been a little bit better if it had some kind of a firm ending there at the end.
Right.
But definitely this is something that, you need to go see. Mm-hmm. Mike said, for the special effects. And as far as if I was going to go out and get this on DVD when it comes out, I think I would, as opposed to the Superman, where I have no desire of buying it on DVD.
Right.
But I think you had mentioned before that you probably would be a Superman fan.
Well, that, and I also want the Bryan Singer behind the details.
Sure.
So, yeah.
But if this when one, this comes out, I will get this on DVD.
I will as well, and I'm just wondering what they're going to add into 2.5+ hours of feature film on the DVD. So I would buy it for that. But then also, again, to see the behind the scenes on the CGI creation effects stuff. And this is just going to be absolutely backbreaking. Awesome. With that, we close the Dead Man's Chest of Gold Doubloons on the Two Guys Talking review of Pirates of the Caribbean, A Dead Man's Chest. I'm Mike Wilkerson, one of your hosts.
I am Brian Sumatras, your other host.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for listening to this edition of the Two Guys Talking Show. We hope you'll tell your friends and coworkers about us, and don't forget to put us on your podcast list. As always, you can visit and contact us online at twoguystalking.com. That's the number 2, guystalking.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.